And you're listening to Regent Radio, Radio Regent, www.radioregent.com. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is Mally, a.k.a. DocuVixen. And like always, we're going to begin with Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And here we go again. A man armed with semi-automatic weapons unleashes his pent-up rage and alienation on his fellow Americans. He kills nearly a dozen people, men, women, and babies, and wounds scores of people. It need not be said that he's American, for that is often assumed. And while events such as these occasionally occur in other lands, as in Norway a year ago, they're most often an American feature. Now, Aurora, Colorado joins the parade of death of Columbine, of Virginia Tech, and other points of massacre. According to police accounts, the accused had his hair colored red and called himself the Joker, a mad villainous character from the comic book made movie series figure Batman. The Joker slays a dozen people. How utterly American. There is something dark and foreboding in the American spirit, a lust for violence that has not been sated by the genocide of Indian tribes, nor centuries of the terrorism waged against Africans, nor the numerous wars abroad. It is in our religious hymns, our national anthem, our entertainment, and in our psyches. War, violence, death, destruction. It is in our imperial foreign policy, and in our domestic policy as well. And now, like a tennis championship title, a new name is etched on the memory of millions of Americans. Aurora, Colorado, 12 and 59. We're number one. Again. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
To Saturday Morning Live on Radio Regent. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And on today's show, we have a very exciting show for you today. But right now, we are getting ready to interview Progress. Are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you, but you see you're very low.
All right.
Yeah, you can be turned up.
We'll straighten that out. How's that?
Still sounds pretty faint. Hello?
All right, I guess
we'll have... Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So we'll just try to fix Norman up.
All right.
You're listening to Radio Regent, and the... can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, Emancipation Day 2012... the Network for Pan-African Solidarity, the United Black Students at Ryerson, and partnering organizations are featuring Emancipation Day 2012 event, None But Ourselves Can Free Our Minds and Bodies.
Yes, sir.
Featuring performances by progressive artists, and it's going to feature a panel discussion with speakers Dr. Melanie Newton, Murphy Brown, Abina Agbetu, and there's a sister from Brazil. Could you, who is she? And I can't pronounce her name. I've never seen her name before.
It's Helio Souza, and that's a capoeira. She's a capoeira teacher. She's going to be speaking on the enslavement and resistance in Brazil, actually.
Okay, now, this event is going to be held Wednesday, August the 1st at 6 p.m. at the Thomas Lounge, Oakham House. That's the first floor. That's at 63 Gould Street in Toronto.
Yes, sir.
Now, this is a very interesting thing. When we talk about Emancipation Day, Emancipation Day is basically dealing with the Africans that were under the colonial rule of the British. Emancipation Day is supposedly not dealing with the emancipation of the Africans under Brazil, under the Americans, under the French. And you have the sister from Brazil in the mix. How did that come about?
Well, I believe one of our members had a personal connection to the individual, and we felt it was important to explore other parts of the diaspora that don't normally get covered or don't get spoken about in regards to emancipation. So we did want to highlight Brazil, and also being that Brazil has the highest concentration of Africans in the diaspora, so it's important that we remember Brazil and are constantly involved in Brazil's narrative of Africans.
Okay, could you give us a history of Emancipation Day?
Well, me as an individual, I don't, I'm not very well versed in the full history of Emancipation Day, but I do know.
Would you like for me to do it for you then?
Pardon me?
I can do it for you because I have.
If you think you could provide a better detailed.
It's not necessarily
the main points, but yes.
Not necessarily better, but this is a flyer that I received, and it basically says that on August 1st, 1834, Africans won their freedom from the British, and you know, people in the Caribbean, Canada, and South Africa and elsewhere were subject to forced labor under a so-called apprenticeship system until August 1st, 1838.
Yes.
And basically, you know, the British had to let the captive Africans go because of you know, the resistance in Haiti in particular, and you had resistance in Brazil. I mean, there was a place called Palmares. They had an independent black republic for almost 100 years, and I don't think a lot of people know about that, but I think it's safe to say that the British were basically forced to, you know, give up their, come up with a different strategy in order to continue reaping the benefits of their colonial system. That's my position.
I think that's a great way to put it, definitely. And just to point out too, Dr. Melanie Newton is going to be speaking about the role of Haiti, the contribution of Haiti in emancipation. So we're definitely looking to cover the various aspects that led into emancipation, and also the main the point behind the event is to celebrate and celebrate emancipation. But what we're mainly looking at doing is to explore the post-emancipation reality for the Caribbean and for the rest of the African diaspora. And just looking at the continued existence of white supremacy and neocolonialism, and how the British, for example, have figured out new ways post-emancipation to continue their work, so to speak, in the African diaspora. And that will be the direction of our discussion. And that's the point. And there's also to mention, too, there's a second event that we'll be having, which will be on the 17th of August. And the venue is yet to be determined, but we'll be announcing that very soon. With a similar topic and a similar focus. I just wanted to add the fact that we will be deconstructing the idea of emancipation, period, and the value of it. Well, clearly in history, it's a valuable time for us and a time for us to commemorate and celebrate. But it's a great time for us to also look at the continued existence of white supremacy and how our people are mobilizing and moving towards true freedom.
When you talk about white supremacy, some people, I'm not saying you, they talk about white supremacy as being all forms of all economic systems, including communism, as being part of a white supremacy, and I don't necessarily agree with that. What do you think about that?
That's interesting. I've definitely encountered individuals who are on that wavelength. I would say personally, and I can also speak for the Network for Pan-African Solidarity in terms of our mandate. White supremacy is more. It's definitely a system, as opposed to just racism, for example. White supremacy is eugenics. It's a racial hierarchy that goes into all arenas, economic, cultural, social, and it deals with people of European descent expressing holistic control over the planet based on a racial hierarchy and taking control of African and indigenous lives and creating a hierarchy of importance of lives based on race. We see it manifest in all arenas of our lives. And as time continues and time and as the years and decades continue, we see it become more complex. And this is why it's so important for us to continue to do the work, because white supremacy, in many people's view and understanding, white supremacy is much stronger now than it's ever been, and it's more complex now than it's ever been. And it's most important for us now to do the ideological work and deconstruct white supremacy that's present in every aspect of our lives.
You're listening to Radio Regent, and this is Saturday Morning Live. Now, when we talk about white supremacy, U.S. imperialism is, to me, the principal enemy of everybody in the world, and U.S. imperialism is led by the spokesperson for U.S. imperialism is a biracial man, an African man, Barack Hussein Obama, and we have neo-colonial puppets in the Caribbean and in Africa who are darker than me, but Haiti is, you know, maybe the blackest country in the Western Hemisphere, and you have he's a kind of a cartoon character to me, the head of state of Dr. Funkenstein, whoever leads Haiti.
Diaper man.
Yeah, Dr. Funkenstein, the head of state of Haiti. But how do you see, you know, the whole question of neocolonialism in the 21st century?
I think you summed it up quite well in your description there. I would say, you know, in recent decades, in the past 100 years or even before that, it's been one of the biggest tools of neocolonialism, of white supremacy, to have the same sell us the same blueprint and express the same power over us via black bodies, and finding these Uncle Tom figures or these individuals that they can speak through, who look like us, who come from our background, and who are able to be the face of power. And I think that's been one of the main strategies of our oppressor, you know, historically and contemporarily, to be able to use various channels and disguise themselves. But, you know, underneath that being the same old blueprint, the same old oppressor. So, once again, they're not recreating the wheel. They're just giving us a little bit of a different image or a different front that we need to deconstruct, continually deconstruct.
Just interesting, going back to your point, going back to sort of Obama question and how, you know, the Americans are now going and fully kind of going into Africa, and how sort of Obama's heritage is kind of used for that fact.
Exactly.
So it's interesting now that they're going full force into Uganda and in the Congo. Yeah, it's interesting how they use sort of these figureheads to get certain gains.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and they've really created the illusion of self-determined involvement from nations of color with NATO and with things like AFRICOM and these different initiatives that go into the third world, and they really do a good job of creating the illusion of involvement of countries with people of color with figureheads to give it sanction on the news, but we know clearly that what happens on the ground is a much different story.
You're listening to Radio Regent. Now, in many events that are organized, you know, by the Black Liberation Movement in many countries, the women have criticized these many of the organizations as being male-dominated. I see that the Pan-African Solidarity, the Network for Pan-African Solidarity, you have three women speakers, and C.L.R. James wrote a great book called The Black Jacobins about the Haitian Revolution. And I remember, you know, hearing about this book and reading this book, and you know, you read the book and you start salivating about Toussaint Dessalines Christophe, and you know, there's this big debate about you know, who was the real revolutionary? Was it Toussaint or was it Dessalines? You know, some people have characterized Dessalines as a madman, but you know, until recently, a lot of us never really even thought about the role that women played in the Haitian Revolution. So I think that, could you talk about that?
Yeah, and I will also point out again, Wednesday, August 1st at 6 p.m., Dr. Melanie Newton, that's going to be one of her areas of expertise that she'll be speaking on, is the contributions of the role of enslaved women in emancipation. But just to answer your question or to address what you're talking about in terms of the role of women in various Black revolutionary organizations and conscious organizations over the years, I couldn't agree more. And it's been a male-dominated space. It's been a space that's been reluctant to deal with patriarchy. There's been an idea of dealing with patriarchy as being divisive to the movement of African consciousness and African liberation, which in my view and in the view of the Network for Pan-African Solidarity couldn't be farther from the truth. we've mandated ourselves to put these issues on the table, deal with patriarchy, deal with the idea of homophobia in our community, extreme homophobia that exists in our community, and we aim to distribute power and equality throughout the organization, throughout the group, and break these chains of patriarchy and homophobia and also ageism that's existed in the movement for African liberation. So the voice of youth, the voice of women, and queer people is one of our number one priorities to be sure that that stays on the forefront.
You're listening to Radio Regent now. There's going to be an event at the Thomas Lounge, Oakham House, on August the 1st, 63 Gould Street, Emancipation Day 2012. Now, I guess we should be very, very frank that in the vanguard of the homophobic movement might be, in the Catholic Church, the vanguard, and I might be wrong in saying this, maybe has been the Nigerian priests, or the priests from Africa have been probably the hardest on, the most homophobic. I don't know, I hope I'm wrong in saying that. I hope someone corrects me, but every time I pick up a newspaper, it's someone from the African continent, primarily Nigeria, talking about gays and lesbians and so on and so forth. Am I correct in saying that?
I think just to caution the wind is like what gets, you know, sort of showcased within in movements or in the media. What I mean, it depends on where your media, you're getting that media from, right?
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
You know what I mean? So like generally any, you know, homophobia is showcased within the Black community, but they don't show, you know, allied work or queer sort of mobilization within that. So I know we have to be careful with those like images. I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. I agree very much. I think there's been an intent on making those particular movements on the continent against queer people. There's been an intent to position them as brutal and savage also. So to be continually more divisive amongst our people.
So. And I don't say that that doesn't exist. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. But yeah, we just have to be careful and sort of where, you know.
Well, Kwame Ture always maintained that the African bourgeoisie was the worst bourgeoisie in the world. That was his position. He was very hard on the current leadership. Now, Kwame passed away in 98, I believe, and I don't know if we can say that things have changed very much since he joined the ancestors. But
I think he would say things have got worse. I agree. He was very hard on the African petty bourgeoisie, and I think that avenue for imperialists and our oppressor has been an avenue that they've used more so now than ever, looking at the African bourgeois as a means to continue their power.
Well, I don't know how old you are, but I would like to hear your take on African on Emancipation Day from a youth, because I remember. I was not living in Detroit at that time, but I know that there was a relationship between Emancipation Day, between the African community in Windsor and the African community in Detroit, whereas Motown used to come to Windsor and they would celebrate Emancipation Day, Stevie Wonder and Supremes and so on and so forth. I have an album, I think the Supremes' first album, and they talk about Emancipation Day in Windsor. When did you become were you born here? Were you born here, first of all?
Yes, I was born in Toronto.
So when did you become aware of Emancipation Day?
Well, I was born in 86, and I didn't, I mean, when I was younger, I probably had been made aware of Emancipation Day, but I have no recollection of it now, 25 years old now. And I guess it's my first recollection of Emancipation Day in recent memory is during my teen years, maybe 16, 15. And that's just, you know, my dad's always been involved in conscious African life here in Toronto, so it's something that I was made aware of. But I think, just to go back to your original question, you know, not just Emancipation Day, but all of our, all the days that we commemorate as conscious African people, I think the awareness has been becoming less and less with each generation. And with Emancipation Day, with African Liberation Day, you know, if I think about my peers, it's, you know, it's little to no, none of us that that are aware, unless we're already involved in organizing or involved in the community on a specific level. But I think if you go back, you know, into your generation or the generation of our parents, the awareness was much, much higher. And I think, once again, that speaks to the continued agenda of white supremacy and the fact that it's become a lot more psychological now. And they've attacked us intergenerationally, and there's an intent to erase our consciousness more so, more and more with each passing generation.
Well, I think that imperialism has divided people in terms of we have the British imperialists. When we talk about British imperialism, we can talk about Emancipation Day, but I grew up in the United States and there was no emancipation. I grew up on the West Coast, so I had absolutely no consciousness of Emancipation Day until I left the United States. And I don't know if someone growing up in Suriname under the Dutch, or growing up in Brazil under the Portuguese, or growing up in Martinique under the French would know that much about Emancipation Day, because it seems to me that the imperialists have, you know, compartmentalized everything to, Emil Caulker-Brawl talked about how we couldn't communicate because of the language. You know, like some people have argued that we need a second language that's going to unify all African people. Some people have argued for Swahili. Some people say Zulu or Yoruba, so on and so forth. But that's another discussion.
I agree very much. And I guess especially with Emancipation Day, I know there's definitely a heavy Caribbean context to Emancipation Day, and just being that the GTA is full of so many people from the Caribbean diaspora, Africans, I think sometimes we forget how heavily we're influenced by our piece of the diaspora. I'm of Jamaican descent, and I'm glad that you just brought up that point, because I mean, it's very true through all the other places in the diaspora with different colonial roots, the awareness of Emancipation Day is not there. But I'm wondering if in other places, if there's not holidays or days throughout the year that are commemorated that would be sort of the equivalent of Emancipation Day. Would you be able to speak to that at all? Or?
Yeah, there are.
I think in the States it's like June 19th, yeah.
Brazil has a day. Everybody that fought against colonialism and imperialism. People commemorate. You know, the Brazilians have. There's a big day in Brazil. I can't remember the day it was, but I can. I'll do some. I won't do any research. I have it already, but I'll put it up on the internet today, because that would be. People need, we as a people, and everybody needs to know those things.
Exactly.
But the interesting thing of growing up in Canada, and also being, Bajan descent, Bert, is so how that was idea. You know, it's commemorated in the Caribbean, and then coming to here and going to high school here. how it's not talked about because, you know, African people in Canada in high school, you don't hear about at all.
No. So,
and the whole myth that, you know, there was no slavery here. So there's no context at all to sort of the sort of emancipation struggle within the colonial context.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it simply didn't really happen here. So,
yeah.
And I just wanted to add to that kind of thing.
I think that's always been a big piece of Canada. I feel like the illusion here in this country is very, very strong, considering when you look at the factual realities of Canada's history being based on genocide, you know, of First Nations people, and then, you know, slavery existing here for many years. And then when we look at the reputation of Toronto and Canada now, this the stark contrast between the historical roots and the current identity. It's just that, to me, you know, that shows a very strong illusion that people here in this country live under.
You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
About the event on August 1st. Once again, it's on this Wednesday, August 1st, at Thomas Lounge in the Oakham House. That's on the Ryerson campus. It's at 63 Gould Street. You can't miss it. It's really easy to find. It's right at Gould and Church. So we will have panelists, as said earlier, Dr. Melanie Newton, Murphy Brown, Helio Souza, and also Henry Gomez, who's an educator and Caravana chairperson. He'll be speaking on carnival arts and festivals in relation to emancipation. And we'll also have a plethora of progressive artists performing. I'll be doing a performance myself. Also, Deborah Allison Costello will be singing a song. We'll have my father, Kwabena Yefeu, and my younger brother, Temba Yefeu Davis, doing a drumming routine. So it's definitely going to be a blessed event. Plus, we'll have free refreshments and snacks, food. And it is a free event, but we do welcome donations as we continue to do work for the people and for our people.
I cut Molly off. She might have something to add.
No, I think that's it. I'm good.
All right, so Wednesday, August 1st, 6 p.m.
Yes, sir. And I'd just also like to say thank you very much for having me on. And I want to thank you for your continued presence in the community and just being a staple of African consciousness in Toronto for so many years. And it's just a blessing to have you in the city. So thank you very much, sir.
And thank you.
Thanks.
And we have been listening to, we have been speaking with Progress about Emancipation Day 2012, and Saturday Morning Live continues.